This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. Everyone's biological clock is ticking, and that can present a challenge, especially to working women. Women are most fertile, typically, from ages 18 to 30, around the same time when careers are being forged and, for some, long-term relationships start to come together. But that's a lot for anyone to handle. So how can you buy a little more time? Well, if you can afford it, one option is cryopreservation, egg freezing. It's coming up more often in casual conversations and in pop culture, including in this episode of The Mindy Project.
When I was your age, I thought that I was going to be married by the time I was 25. But it took a lot longer than that. And unfortunately, your body does not care if you are dating the wrong guy, or the guy you're with is also sleeping with the rest of your dorm. Your body and your eggs just keep getting older, which is why freezing them is actually a pretty smart idea, because it gives you a little bit more time so that you can try to find that one diamond in the crap heap of American men. Because even if you find the right guy, you're gonna want a little extra time.
As part of our week-long series, Beyond Mother's Day, we wanted to take a look at egg freezing. What exactly is it? How does it work? And what are some of the considerations women must make before deciding to sign up? We'll put those questions and more to our panel of experts just after this.
Support for 1A and the following message come from American Express. These days, keeping up with everything in the news is hard, whether it's politics or pop culture. American Express believes it's always easier to stay ahead when there's someone behind you. Easier to focus on what matters, to follow what interests you, to explore, to discover. And with American Express, you don't have to go it alone because they have your back. Don't live life without it.
Hey everyone, I'm Robin Hilton with All Songs Considered, NPR's Music Discovery Podcast. When you're in school, sometimes a song can be your best friend. It gives you hope, help purges anxieties, or just lets you know you're not alone in the world. On this week's show, we play the songs that got you through school. Hear All Songs Considered in the NPR One app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Joining us from New York to begin our conversation is best-selling author Sloane Crosley. Sloane is the author of Look Alive Out There, a collection of essays, one of which includes her experience with freezing her eggs. Sloane, welcome to 1A.
Thank you for having me.
What got you thinking about egg freezing?
Well, I think what I wanted to buy was more brain space than time. And I mentioned this, you know, in the essay about how really the sort of heap of articles and the sort of deluge of, you know, about a woman's right to freeze the eggs, to not freeze the eggs, the pressure to do it, to have a baby, not have a baby. I just wanted to shut the faucet off, and I wanted to buy myself a little more time to think about it, not so much time biologically, if that makes sense.
What did you think was holding that faucet open? Was it pressure from society, pressure from family? Where was that coming from?
Oh, you know, since birth, basically. I mean, there's a thing that it's always so funny. We're tough on women who, as kids, you know, I am, for instance, someone who never played with little dolls or wheeled around miniature baby carriages as a child. But this idea that I'm supposed to be proud of the fact that, you know, oh, well, not me. I wasn't one of those girls. And this way that we sort of suppress women's power to procreate, this amazing thing from an early age, and then we sort of turn it back on almost when it's too late, you know, like that clip you played with the Mindy Project, you know, and maybe you haven't found the right person, maybe your life isn't set up for it, or maybe there's no room for it by the time everyone looks at you and says, well, shouldn't you have a baby by now?
Do you remember where you were and what was going on the moment you decided to pursue egg freezing?
Yeah, it was mathematical. I mean, it's really expensive. And, you know, I sort of waited until I had enough money that I felt like my bank account could take the hit and sort of grow back like a bonsai tree. And it would notice eventually 5 years down the road that money was missing.
How much money did you feel you needed to set aside?
It was about $10,000. It turns out, needed a little bit less because, as I say in the essay, I'm a sort of strange case in the fact that I didn't need as many drugs and hormones as they thought I would need because my body reacted very well to them and I produced a rather obscene number of eggs.
Yeah, I do want to get to that in just one second,
okay.
But let's back up to the preparation for that. So $10,000,
sure.
Did you have $10,000? Did you have to work for it? Did you borrow it?
Oh, of course I had to work for it. But, I mean, the thing is I worked for a company. I worked for Random House for about 10 years at that, of course, now does cover egg freezing. So I really, my timing was poor. I left just before that would have kicked in. But then, you know, I'm a freelance writer. I work very hard. I save money. And, you know, I have several books, a novel and some essays. And I had, you know, enough to do this. And it also seemed to me like not a frivolous expense. It seemed like sort of an insurance policy and something proactive I could do for my future and for my health.
What about emotional support from friends or family?
Oh, of course I have that too. I say that like it's a given. I guess some people don't. But, you know, and I was dating someone at the time too. And the train had sort of already left the station on our about third date. I said, by the way, I'm doing this. But, you know, of course I had the support, which you sort of need because, you know, you're shooting yourself up with hormones and it does imitate the process of being pregnant, or at least the emotions involved. So I found that, you know, I wasn't irrationally emotional, but if I stubbed my toe, I'd start crying and genuinely could not stop.
Did your family or how did your family react when they found out that you wanted to do this? Were they supportive? Were they critical?
They were completely supportive of it because I think they know me and they know that a lot of why I froze my eggs is a sort of ambivalence about having kids and thinking that, well, I'm certainly not going to regret it if I do have them. And it's one of these things where you sort of have to look at yourself and decide, do I absolutely never want to have them? In which case, maybe freezing eggs isn't an option. But am I sort of now making an investment in the me that might change my mind down the road?
Sloan, what about the fertility clinic? What was that experience like?
Well, the clinic itself was lovely and professional. You know, there's nothing wrong with it objectively. I'm a humorist, and so I tend to look at things through a slightly skewed prism. So I remember at some point, I don't know if it was the clinic I went to, but while I was researching them, there was a website that had this very happy couple in a park with a golden retriever puppy, and underneath it said, "Let us help you meet your family goals." And I kept thinking, oh, good, I can give birth to a puppy. That sounds so much more ideal than I ever
retriever.
Hoped. Not just any puppy, mind you, exactly.
You picked the breed.
And so, you know, I sort of went into it with a sort of hopeful kind of feeling. And I have to say that the waiting rooms are a little rough, to be totally honest, because you get a lot of there's sort of a sadness there because the place I went to, which is lovely, it's called RMA, they do a lot of people who are really looking to have kids. So they're looking to complete the second half of this, which is IVF, and to or to have frozen embryos and to really have children, less people who are on the fence like me.
IVF, and in vitro fertilization.
Yes, excuse me, yes. And so there was that feeling. I mean, I actually saw a woman sort of, you know, kind of zoned out and knitting a baby blanket at some point, which is something that, you know, I was thought I can't even make this up. And so I sort of felt their want and their need was, you could feel the weight of it in those rooms. But the actual clinic and the process was great.
You said that you had the unusual situation of producing more eggs than expected. Talk about
yes.
that.
So it's really weird. And this is part of why I wrote this essay, because I sort of dipped my toe into the world of competitive female biology by undergoing this process. And I learned pretty quickly after I had this unusual number of eggs, I think the average amount, you have a doctor coming on soon who can speak with more authority about this. But, you know, people get between 8 to 20, and I got 67.
67.
Yeah, I'm like a fish. But the point is, is that I, you know, and I had a sort of panoply of medical complications as a result of it, but I learned very quickly to keep my mouth shut about that, because to desperately want a baby and not be able to have one, I mean, you don't need me to tell you. I mean, watch The Handmaid's Tale or you know, it turns people insane. It can be devastating, and it's really hard. And so to have sort of hit this jackpot in the middle of my ambivalent state, I was sort of inviting a little bit of anger from other women. But that's part of why I wrote the essay, because it's not the dystopian future, and nor is it, you know, Jane Austen's world. It's such a personal choice, and we impose all these societal pressures on it.
Sloan, you said that your process in the fertility clinic yielded 67 eggs. What became
yes.
of them? Did you preserve all of them?
A couple of them were duds. I don't know the medical term.
They weren't viable.
Yes. But yeah, pretty much all of them. I mean, what became of them? They're like, they're in a freezer somewhere. They're not sending me letters. You know, camp is cold. We're good. it was a really sort of, I sort of did what I did. I just sort of went through the motions to do something proactive, like I said, for my health. And I didn't really have an emotional experience until they sent me a photocopy of the eggs that just look like, you know, tiny little craters on some distant moon. And I looked at them and I thought, wow, like I've never seen a part of my body, even if it's just a small portion of my body, exist outside my body before.
Yeah, that's got to be a bit of a head trip to see that.
Yeah, it's really cool, though. I mean, it's kind of amazing imagining that one of them could possibly make a baby. And there's that hope there, and it's not necessarily the other side of that hope isn't devastation if it doesn't happen. But it's so wonderful to know that they're there.
Let me get to a few of your comments, including your experiences with egg freezing or not. Rita emailed, unfortunately, as a woman who spent nearly a decade in graduate school to obtain an MA and PhD and then build a career, I delayed motherhood. When I was in graduate school, no one talked about egg freezing, and I had no idea it was an option, let alone how to go about it clinically or financially. If I had known, I would definitely have scraped together funds to freeze my eggs. Now, as a woman in her 40s, I have not been able to conceive, and there is statistically no chance for me to have a biological child. We need to support women to consider this option before time runs out for them, as it did for me. Sloan, I note that Rita refers to a biological child. When you think about motherhood for yourself, were you specific on your desire for a biological child as opposed to adoption?
Well, the thing is, it's sort of an order. The thought process goes in order, right? So you originally want a biological child, and then when you can't, you then, you know, look into other options depending on how much you want a child, depending on how you feel about motherhood. And so it's a weird cart before the horse thing where it's not – I wasn't at a stage where I'd already tried all these other things. I wasn't even sure about it. So I thought if I could have a biological child, why not – try to do that. And if I can't, I would happily adopt. But that's just my personal choice.
Before we let you go, Sloan, what would you tell women who are thinking of going through this process based on your experience? Anything you would recommend or anything that you would have done differently if you had it to do over again?
Well, absolutely, I would tell them to do it. I mean, I'm a weird outlier. I would tell them if they can do it, they should do it. The one thing I would tell them is a really practical thing, which is that they make you pick up all the drugs from, you know, specific pharmacies at once, and the drugs can be thousands of dollars in and of themselves. But if you don't need them all, then you're saddled with all these extra drugs. So just make the trip back and forth to the pharmacy as you need it is a real just financial thing I would tell women who are seriously considering this.
And when you say drugs, you're talking about the hormones that are involved in?
Yes. I mean, not black tar heroin. Definitely the hormones that are involved. Yes.
I don't know what pharmacy you go to.
A really good one.
In New York, what got black tar heroin added, but you and me need to have a conversation.
Yeah,
DEA.
I mean the hormones. Yeah.
Sloan Crosley, best-selling author. Her book is called Look Alive Out There. Sloan, thanks for talking to us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Let's bring in the rest of our guests for the hour, and we'll get to some more of your questions and stories as well. Joining us from NPR in New York is Dr. Joshua Klein, the Chief Medical Officer and Reproductive Endocrinologist at Extend Fertility, the first fertility center based solely on egg freezing. Dr. Klein, welcome to 1A.
Thanks very much for having me.
Joining us from Berkeley, California is Marcy Darnovsky, the Executive Director at the Center for Genetics and Society. It's a social justice organization focused on making biotechnology serve the common good. Marcy, welcome.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
And also with us from Berkeley is Dr. Amy Avazadeh, also known as the Egg Whisperer. She is a reproductive fertility specialist who has hosted more than 25 parties for women to discuss egg freezing. Doctor, welcome.
Thank you.
Dr. Klein, let me start with you. Can you just break down the process of egg freezing, just the very basics from when someone walks into the clinic and says, this is something I want to do, to the preservation of eggs in some kind of cryogenic tank? How does that process work?
Sure. The first thing I think that's important to emphasize is that not everyone is the same. Shockingly, not every woman is the same. And what I mean by that is that the way we like to sort of do our process at Extend Fertility is that we spend a lot of time before a woman decides if this is a good decision for her to make. There are certain biological data points that can be collected, blood testing, ultrasound testing, that can give us a pretty good sense of how many eggs a woman might produce in an egg freezing cycle. And that's a key factor in terms of discussing with a woman what she might get or what she might not get out of the process. And so the first thing to do is to gather the data to inform the conversation. Then we have a consultation where we go through what we know and what we don't know, you know, the power and then the limitation of egg freezing. And at that point, it's something that hopefully a patient feels well informed about, you know, what the pluses and minuses are, what the risks of the procedure are. And then if she decides to move forward, that's when the actual treatment moves forward.
What would you say, Dr. Klein, is the main plus, the main minus, and the main risk factor that all women who are interested in egg freezing should bear in mind? The main plus, the main minus, and the main risk.
Sure. I mean, the main plus is the obvious one. I mean, these are great comments that you're getting from your audience. You know, the egg freezing is a technology that is miraculous at some level in the sense that it can give the opportunity, just like in vitro fertilization has done for the last generation, it can give the opportunity to a woman to have a family that she wants. But without this opportunity or without this technology, she wouldn't have that option. And so there's absolutely women out there who will be able to sort of achieve their family building goals, their life goals, by taking advantage of egg freezing that they wouldn't have that opportunity otherwise. The main minus, I'm not sure if I can give you the number one. I mean, the cost is an issue, absolutely. And that's something that is important to us, important to me, I think should be important to us as a fertility specialty. And it's not an easy process. There's definitely significant amount of time and effort and some discomfort for most women. So it's an investment, an investment on many different levels. As far as the risks, you know, I think it is crucial that a woman knows that it is a serious medical procedure. There are relatively uncommon but not unheard of medical complications that can occur. And also that's for the woman. And then in terms of the other side of this is the babies. Egg freezing has only been used or utilized in large numbers in the last number of years. And most women who have frozen their eggs have not yet come back to use them. So there are thousands of babies that have been born from frozen eggs, but not millions. And so we're definitely continuing to study the long-term outcomes on that side.
Dr. Avazadeh, talk about the people that you deal with regards to egg freezing. I understand you've treated people from a wide array of walks of life. Are there certain common bonds, certain common traits among the patients that you see or the folks you talk to who are interested in egg freezing, or do they really span the whole, you know, every walk of life?
Right. The way I think about it, there's two main motivators for someone who wants to freeze their eggs. There's a woman who wants to proactively manage her health and give herself an option for the future. I think that there's maybe this myth out there that women are doing it because they, of course, they love their career so much. But honestly, it really has to do with the fact that they want future options and they're not quite ready to be a mom right now. And then there's the other group of people who need to freeze their eggs for medical reasons, maybe a cancer diagnosis, or they're transgender and transitioning. So I see patients from both groups with those motivations, and I treat them all the same with the same care and compassion.
Dr. Avazadeh, what about the financial aspects of egg freezing? I imagine this can really add up over time.
Right. I mean, I think it's great that Facebook, Apple, Google, these companies made egg freezing a dinner time topic of conversation. But the problem is now you have this access issue where you have women who have these tech jobs that have the access, and then you have women who don't. For example, the teachers in our area, they're very interested in learning about their fertility and doing fertility screening. But when it comes to actually doing the procedure itself, there is a financial barrier. So the cost can be anywhere from $10,000 to $18,000, depending on the amount of medication that your body needs to produce the eggs. And I'm trying to figure out a way to help those women. And I know that there are other folks out there that are like-minded, but that's why I created the program Freeze and Share for women who would like to freeze their eggs. Cost is a barrier, but they also see that maybe donating an egg to a family in need would also be a way to contribute to the world and help themselves freeze and preserve their own fertility.
C wrote on our website, the1a.org, it seems pretty clear that more women would be open to it because they want alternative options in an effort to maintain their current career path trajectory. Due to an outdated workplace environment, having children often stunts a woman's career. It also seems strange that employers would encourage egg freezing. It seems more like a subtle effort to avoid paying out Family Medical Leave Act benefits when women go on maternity leave. Employers are more than willing to pay for egg freezing than they are in providing affordable childcare options and or paid maternity leave. Marcy, I wonder what you think about that. You're in the Bay Area, where there are a number of companies like Google and Apple and Facebook who will pay for their female employees' costs for egg freezing. But if memory serves, they also provide pretty rad childcare. Like, I don't think it's either or, at least not for those companies.
It's not necessarily either or, but we'd really like to see those companies providing those benefits, not just to their high-paid engineers and other employees, but to all the contractors who work for them. And even though there are a lot of tech employees in the Bay Area, there are an awful lot of women who don't have access to those kind of benefits. And, you know, those pressures are not necessarily so subtle as your listener put it. They can be pretty coercive, even if there's no direct command to delay childbearing so you can lean in. I think that that option is there. And then also, I think we really need to take a better look than we have so far in this discussion at what the risks are for women who are undergoing egg retrieval. You know, we've been doing in vitro fertilization for coming up on 40 years, and it's when I learned this, I was stunned. There is still no long-term data about the effects, the after effects of egg retrieval for women. And, you know, I find that amazing. So we know something about the short-term risks, and those have been referred to a little bit so far in our discussion. The numbers that you often see in the literature seem, from research that's underway now, to be understated. And this syndrome that Sloan referred to, ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome, can be serious if it's not managed correctly.
Dr. Klein,
I think that the
go ahead. I'm sorry, Marcy. Go ahead.
Yeah, no. The guests that you know, the medical people that we're talking to today, I think are caring and careful and responsible. But when we hear stories, which we do all too often, of women who have 60, 70, 80 eggs retrieved, that is not a good thing. It's not a good outcome, and it makes you wonder about whether it's responsible medical practice.
Dr. Klein, what about that? What about the potential risks, particularly from OHSS, which was what Sloan had?
Yeah, I think it's an absolutely crucial conversation that any patient who doesn't have the opportunity to have that topic explored before she makes a decision about egg freezing isn't getting the right attention. I think that there are things like OHSS, you know, getting 60 or more eggs is, I think, any respectable endocrinologist would agree, is not our target.
What is the target? What's normal?
There's a wide spectrum of normal. An average number of eggs might be between 10 and 15, which is, again, why 60 is such an outlier. And we do have lots of ways that we strategize with the medications towards steering people to a safe place. Biology is certainly not math, and so there's always going to be uncertainties. But the reassuring thing is, I think there's lots of good data to say that when managed appropriately, the risk of, let's say, having severe OHSS, which is the form of OHSS which can be, you know, something that requires hospitalization, that's right, something that is, you know, a 1% kind of incidence, not mm-hmm. something that is occurring on a regular basis.
More for us to discuss in just a moment. Hold that thought, if you would, Dr. Klein. We want to continue our conversation with Dr. Joshua Klein of Extend Fertility, Marcy Darnowski of the Center for Genetics and Society, and Dr. Amy Avazadeh, a reproductive fertility specialist. We'll get to more of your questions and comments in just a moment. Stay close.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting your short list of candidates fast. With Indeed, post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates.
And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free when you sign up at Indeed.com/NPR podcast. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
I'm Ophira Eisenberg. Join me on NPR's Ask Me Another as we challenge contestants and celebrities to nerdy word games, music parodies, and ponderful trivia. Find us every week on the NPR One app and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dr. Klein, a question I forgot to ask you earlier. Sloan mentioned some of the medications that were involved and how to make the cost not so prohibitive for a woman who's going through egg freezing. What are the medications that are involved? A number of hormones, as I understand it. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so the general idea is that biologically, without the influence of medication, a woman will naturally have one egg each month that matures and grows. And so if we did egg freezing without any medication, we would be aiming to get that one egg. The challenge is that the statistical likelihood of any one egg turning into a child is quite low. And that's where the whole idea of getting a whole bunch of eggs all at once is why it's part of the general strategy with regard to egg freezing, so that we can talk about having respectable and at times great chance of success later on. These medications are hormones that are not the typical hormones when people think of reproductive hormones like estrogen or progesterone, the things that go in hormone replacement therapy. They're more like brain hormones. And so the medications are synthetic forms of those brain hormones that talk to the ovaries to get eggs to grow. And the one comment I want to make specifically is that talking about long-term risk, there are literally hundreds of studies that have been performed and published with regard to the long-term health risks of using these medications, specifically with regard to long-term health risks of cancers. You know, egg freezing is a new technology in the laboratory, but the clinical approach of using those medications to get eggs to grow is something, as we've noted, that's been used for about 40 years for IVF patients. And so conveniently, we do have a long-term and robust amount of experience in the world with those kind of medications.
Dr. Avazadeh, you said that you had done an egg retrieval just recently. Can you describe what an egg retrieval is like? How long does it take? What is involved? Is it painful? Is it uncomfortable? What is egg retrieval like?
Absolutely. It's just like a pelvic ultrasound while you're asleep. So we walk into the operating room. And what that means is there's a board-certified anesthesiologist there. You have an IV placed before we walk in, and you lie down. And then while you're asleep, we put your legs up in the stirrups, very similar to what would happen during a fertility screening appointment when we're looking at your ovaries on ultrasound. Except instead this time, we're introducing a needle one time into each side of the vagina, entering the ovaries and draining the follicles, which are fluid-filled sacs that contain the eggs. And depending on the number of eggs that you have, you might have a little bit more swelling afterwards if you had, let's say, over 10 eggs retrieved versus 3 to 4 eggs retrieved. The procedure itself typically takes about 15 minutes, maybe 30 minutes, and then your recovery time is about 45 minutes after the procedure until you go home. Most patients are sleepy, have a little bit of soreness in their abdomen. 95% of my patients go back to work the next day. 5% don't, and the 5% that don't are the ones who usually have over 15 eggs retrieved. So I recommend rest, hydration, stool softeners, pain meds. I also require my patients to have a fertility friend or someone who's there with them the entire day of the egg retrieval, and this is something that we talk about in advance. And then I also ask them to have flexibility in their work schedule so that if they need to take extra time off, they have that time and flexibility and they're not stressed about how it can take away from their work life and other things that they need to do.
Dr. Avazadeh, you have egg freezing parties. And you do a YouTube channel called The Egg Whisperer. I can only imagine what an egg freezing party is like. I assume it's just a social event to talk about egg freezing.
Yeah, I mean, basically, I bring in a DJ and I get everyone totally trashed, and then I have a surgical table set up, and then I start freezing eggs.
See, now don't let that.
No.
That clip is going to be. You better not run for office because that clip's going to be.
No. I mean, honestly, it's a safe space for people, women, men, the LGBT community, to talk openly and learn from me about their fertility preservation options. My goal is for everyone to know about fertility screening and how to follow your fertility health over time. You know, fertility is so taboo. We need to treat it like a medical issue, destigmatize it, and offer everyone fertility screening. Everyone knows that you can get your boobs done. No one knows that you can get your fertility health checked. We know that cervical cancer screening is the Pap test. We know that breast cancer screening is the mammogram. We need people to know that fertility screening involves labs that you can get checked, like the FSH, estradiol, and AMH. And because so few people actually know that, and I see so many women in their 40s that say, why have I not heard of this stuff? I've spent so much time in my OBGYN's office, and no one has taught me about these simple tests that I can do. And no one wants to be diagnosed with cancer before it's too late. And it's the same thing about our egg health. No one wants to be diagnosed with menopause before it's too late. So that's basically why I started Egg Freezing Parties. Is it's simply a fertility health awareness campaign so that I can see less patients, so I can freeze less eggs, so I can do less IVF. It's as simple as that.
There were also recently two cases in which thousands of eggs were put at risk. Here is an Ohio family talking about the loss of their embryos.
It has been a roller coaster of emotions for Amber and Elliot Ash of Bay Village.
We had two embryos that were stored at University Hospitals, Ahuja Medical Center. And those two embryos, unfortunately, we were told yesterday by two of the physicians that they were not deemed viable.
Those embryos, two of the more than 2,000 that may have been damaged after a storing disaster earlier this month. University Hospitals explained the temperature of the tissue storage bank, where eggs and embryos are housed in liquid nitrogen, fluctuated unexpectedly.
There is nothing worse than being told that these embryos you worked so hard to create and invested so much of your time and your physical self and your emotional self, and of course the financial piece, they're gone. They're gone in an instant.
Part of a news report about an Ohio couple who lost their eggs. Marcy, I wonder, as we're winding down briefly, what you think about the regulation of this industry. Are there more questions that need to be asked?
Yes, I think there are, because these procedures are very underregulated. They take place in doctors' offices, and it's very unusual for doctors to criticize each other's work. It's very unusual for the trade association or professional association that the fertility industry has to intervene in any way to improve practices. And so I think anyone can hang out a shingle, and anyone can market these practices in language that they want to. That's why people think it's an insurance policy when it's not. That's why I think people underestimate the risks and overestimate the possibility of a success. And the tragedies of the cryo storage facilities is,
right,
you know, really just one of the reasons that we have to be very wary about technical fixes for what really we should be approaching much more as a social problem.
Speaking of a social problem, I do want to acknowledge a number of you have written comments like the one that Trish tweeted. Trish wrote, "In a world full of homeless children, an environment under siege from too many people, and such tremendous need everywhere, spending $10,000 to freeze one's eggs isn't only frivolous, it's irresponsible and selfish." Dr. Klein, before we go, for women who are thinking about, or for people who are thinking about cryopreservation of their eggs, what's the one biggest thing you would remind them or urge them to do as they begin investigating, briefly, before we're out of time?
Sure. I think I'll end where I started, which is that I think there's a lot of information that is available to be obtained. As Dr. Avazadeh said, there's testing that can be done, and you can learn about yourself. Doing that is something that doesn't commit you to actually proceeding with egg freezing. But I think the big mistake in my mind that people can make is to sort of keep their head in the sand and not get educated, not understand their own biology. I think Dr. Darnovsky is making great points about things that as a society we can do better. And I think there's a lot of uncertainty that exists around egg freezing. But I think it's also important to note that at the end of the day, there's a lot of certainty around the biological clock. All women will get to menopause. All women are infertile eventually. And so this is something that people can proactively explore and make an informed choice if it's something they want to take advantage of.
Dr. Joshua Klein of Extend Fertility, Marcy Darnovsky of the Center for Genetics and Society, and Dr. Amy Avazadeh, the Egg Whisperer, thank you all for talking to us. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thank you so much for listening. This is One Egg.